Hey everyone, Steve Cooper, the ConservativeMonster.com radio show. Today we have Dr. Jim Garrow, and he's an old friend of the Conservative Monster, and it's a pleasure and an honor to have you on the show. How you doing there, Jim?
Great, Steve. It's really good to be on your show. You know I've been following you for years and appreciate everything you write, what you speak of, the guests you have, and obviously, being a conservative myself, I just appreciate everything you're standing for. And, by the way, as a result of some of the things you're doing and saying, you're encouraging people all across the United States to stand up for the Republic and the Constitution, which all I can do is say kudos, man. Well done.
Yeah, that's it. So, you know, congratulations on this book. So WorldNet Daily contacted you, and they're going to help you get it out there. That's excellent news. How did that happen?
Well, actually, I guess I was kind of shopping around the book. I have an agent in California, and she had it out to a bunch of different, you know, regular mainstream media kind of booksellers like Random House and, you know, all these others. Anyway, so online, you know, I've been watching WorldNet Daily, you know, and I received their publications, and I realized, man, you know, this Joseph Farah and Elizabeth Farah, man, they're right on.
Yeah.
And I thought, these are my kind of people. They're talking my kind of world. So they're basically having the same worldview and a Christian slant on stuff. So, I mean, that's me. So I just boldly, on my own, I didn't even tell my agent I was doing it, I sent off just a little letter through email just explaining what the Pink Pagoda, the book, is about and my work in China saving baby girls from gendercide. So I get a response from Mr. Farah, and he's very interested. And he said he was going to get their editor-in-chief, a woman named Megan Bird, to contact me. And sure enough, she phones me, and next thing you know, they're buying the rights to the book right out from under Random House.
Wow. Wow.
And yeah. For me, I don't care about the publisher in terms of, you know, being the biggest in the world, although it's turned out the WorldNet Daily has set publishing on its ear because of what they're doing on the net. You know, they sell more books on the net than all these other guys put together. And nobody knows that. Here's this little upstart group, very right-wing, very Christian, who are just setting the publishing world on fire, unbeknownst to, you know, most folks. But, you know, now that I'm kind of on the edge of the publishing world, I'm taking note of all this stuff. And I mean, everyone's yakking about WorldNet Daily, and frankly, the left hate them.
Yeah. Well, I met Joseph Farah, and I've spoken to him a few times. He's a stand-up guy, let me tell you, and he's like a down-to-earth guy, and I'm really glad that he's helping you out. So how can people get the book? They go to worldnetdaily.com or pinkpagoda.com. How do you want them to go about this to get the book?
Well, right now, the book is coming out March 13th.
Okay.
It's a little ways away, but you can pre-order on Amazon.com.
Okay.
I think you can pre-order. I know Barnes & Noble has it on already.
Mm-hmm.
Most of your major booksellers already have it on, available for sale.
Right. Yeah, usually it is pre-order. That's what I meant. But so now, pinkpagoda.com. Please tell everyone your mission. I mean, it's just phenomenal. You were nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize too, which is just awesome work. Tell everyone about your mission.
Okay, and by the way, as you know, this tall black guy, won it in 2009.
Yes, Obama won that Peace Prize for not what he has done, but what he's about to do.
Okay, how's it working out so far for you?
Oh, yeah. This is, handing the United States over to the world, the global communist community, that's really, the agenda, in my opinion, And it looks like, that's exactly where we're headed.
Yeah, that's the way I see it too, you know, and my perspective is, you know, basically, although I don't know if you knew this, I went to school a lot in the States, like high school, and some of my university years were spent there. And by the way, some of my classmates from Columbia actually know me and remember me because I was really in class with them.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, that's a sidebar. But the Pink Pagoda, and by the way, if they want to see it online, it's pinkpagoda.org.
Oh, dot org. I thought it was .com.
That's .org.
Oh, .org. I apologize. Okay. I just searched Pink Pagoda and it came up, but I'll put the link on with this interview also.
Okay, that's great.
Okay, so now, your mission, now you have saved 40,000 Chinese little girls from being killed. I mean, it's just phenomenal story. Just tell us. Now, really, I'm curious about this. I wrote this down because I always think of the sinister plots in the background. Have you ever been threatened by any of the communists by saying, hey, you know what? Keep away from this. Mind your business.
Yes.
I thought so.
Yes. Yeah, but I think those people are dead.
Okay. So it's a happy ending. The babies are alive and they're dead.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting to me is that we've been provided almost like protective coverage in China, because really what we're doing is we're filling in a gap that exists between the law and what the poor Chinese people really want, which is they don't want to have to give up their baby girls. They don't want to have to just have one child, but it's the policy of the government.
Right.
So they're put in this awful position of making a choice. If they have a baby girl, and you know all the traditions are male-oriented in terms of, you know, passing on property and inheritance, and so it's preferred to have a baby boy. Oh, and by the way, in retirement, it's the son who is responsible for taking care of the parents in their old age. So, you know, if it's a baby girl and, you know, she marries into another family, of course, her responsibilities follow the husband.
Right. Well, it's also, you know, what's your opinion on this? Now, to have more boys, that's more boys for the military. That's more strength. What's that?
In fact, that's how this is viewed.
Yeah.
With respect to the military, well, let's go back a little bit. What the policy has done is skewed the population mass
right
heavily in favor of boys. In fact, in 2010, The Economist magazine did this huge article on China and on the impact of the one-child policy, and it ends up being that a normal distribution of births would see 100 baby girls being born and 104 to 106 baby boys being born. And that's the normal. That's the natural numbers that come up in any nation. And the reason is because girls are hardier than boys. So if, like, boys, you know, 4, 5, 6 of them out of 100 die off, that's just the way it is. Girls are tougher. I hate to say it, but they really are.
Yeah.
So here's the deal, is that in China, the skewing of the numbers is so great that now the average birth distribution, males to females, is 100 girls, 126 boys with this policy. So what you have is a cultural nightmare being kindled as a result of this policy on the part of the government. So you get this huge preponderance of males who are never going to find a wife to marry, never going to have a chance to have a family themselves. So what do you do with all of these extra males? Well, as you know, Steve, you encourage them to go into the military, and that's what's happened. That's why right now they have a military of 150 million men. That's not including women. 150 million men, and it's growing. Now think about all the reserves. Think about the Coast Guard, all your regular full-time military people in the United States. It amounts to 8 million people in total, and that's it.
Hmm.
150 million versus 8?
Well,
tell me who's got the big stick in the world right now.
Yes, yes. And you know what else I just thought of, too, is you have so many Chinese brides. I mean, it's like, so the women are trying to get out of communist China also, so that's even less women for the males there.
You got it. You got it. Exactly right.
And, you know, so what makes a man angry, angrier than not having, a female partner? Boy, you know, he's ready to kill. Really, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah, exactly right. So in this mix of events and government policy, the fallout is that many families choose, if they have a baby girl, and they've allowed the baby girl to go full term, they now have a choice of what do we do with this baby girl? Do we kill it and make way for a son, thereby, you know, fit into the cultural norm, which is that the male is going to do all the good stuff for the parents in their old age and bring pride to the family and carry on family name, although that's kind of a mixed bag there with the use of family name. But so they're presented with this dilemma. What do we do if we have a baby girl? We've only got one shot at it, one child that we're allowed to have. So many of them, 8 million a year, are murdered. Baby girls are murdered. Now, many of them are just, you know, taken after birth and thrown into a pail in a hospital, and they're left to die. Many of them are given over to a priest, a Buddhist priest, who does them in. Now, they call it putting aside, setting aside the child. But, you know, here's where I ran into this problem with you hear about it, it's a rumor, but you don't really believe it. But one day, one of my secretaries, an assistant in the office, was bawling her eyes out, just sobbing. And it turns out once we did a little bit of investigation that her sister had given birth to a baby girl, and the father wanted to put the baby aside and try for a boy.
Hmm.
Meant that they were going to kill this baby girl.
Right.
But when I found this out, it just totally freaked me out that this would be the case, that they could even conscience looking at killing their own child. I couldn't believe it. So I said to my assistant, her name was Shinyi, you get a hold of your sister, you tell her that Jim wants her baby. I will take her baby. We will not allow this baby to die. If she has something has to happen, then we will take the baby and we'll preserve its life. And so, I mean, this is me just talking off the top of my head. I have no clue how we do it or the implications or, you know, I knew nothing. All I knew was that I was heartbroken for her.
Yeah.
You know, that this would be the case. So the long and the short of it is that we ended up flying halfway across China, saved the baby girl, brought her back to the city we were in, and it just happened that one of the rivalries in the world of hockey, you know, I'm not Canadian, so I play hockey, and a lot of Americans do, you know, especially in the north and northwest, you know, Minnesota and Michigan and those kinds of states, Wisconsin, they play hockey, and they're just as crazy as we are about the sport.
Right.
So, and I understand you have a team in New York. Sadly.
Yeah.
We won't talk about its ability and, you know, winning levels. Anyway, so there's this rivalry in China, and many of the malls in China, because they're so modern, you know, and people have this notion that, you know, China is some throwback to ancient times, right? That's right. The way they think of it. Well, not so. In the big cities, they're better off than any American city, frankly, or any Canadian city. They got everything. It's just, they're egos are all wrapped up on being leading edge. So you go to a mall in China, a shopping mall, and you'll find that there's a skating rink. Like an Olympic-sized hockey rinks are kind of the norm all over the place. So what happens is you get very few people who know how to skate in China, but everyone wants to give it a shot at some point in time. But on a Friday night or a Saturday night after work, who gets together to play hockey? It's the expats, the Americans and the Canadians. We get together and we bang each other around, you know, on a hockey rink. So this is the norm in China. So I'm playing hockey, and I'm a goalie most of the time. Anyway, one night we're playing against the Americans, you know, Canadians versus Americans, and having a great old time. It's non-contact. Well, supposedly non-contact. So this guy comes whipping in on the net to deflect the puck. And the idea is, you know, you stop right in front of the net, the crease, and you deflect the puck up and into the net. Well, this guy doesn't stop. He just, you know, careens right through me, knocks me into the back of the net. The net goes off, and we ended up in the backboards. the rule is that if you do something stupid like that, you have to buy a round of beer. So after the game, we're out in a bar, and he's buying the round of beer, you know, really apologetic, and you know, he's sitting right across from me at the table, and we're having a good time. Anyway, I ask him how he gets there in China and what he's doing. So he tells me about his wife and him, they can't have kids, and, you know, the long and the short of it, here's this guy who just, you know, nailed me good. They want to adopt a Chinese baby, but, you know, they can't afford it, and the waiting list is years long, and, you know, they're in China, so they know what's happening. So that's in the back of my brain when we go and rescue this one girl.
Wow.
The very this whole thing. So I get back to the city where I play hockey, and I play hockey I think two nights later or something, and there's this guy, and I take him aside and I say to him, well, listen, how soon do you want to have a baby? And he's kind of like, what do you mean? He's a little suspicious right off the bat because, you know, I kind of blurted it out. And I said, well, you know, if you had a chance to adopt, would you guys adopt her, like, right away? And he said, yeah, but it would take years to do that. And he's looking at me funny. Anyway, he goes to the bathroom. One of my staff members is there from one of our schools. And he says, this Garrow guy, is he okay? Is he a little bit off, or is he for real? And the guy says to him, well, actually, if Garrow's talking to you about babies, we know what's just happened and where things are going, so you better listen to him. And by the way, he's for real. You can trust him. So he comes back to the table with a little bit different attitude, and he says, so tell me what's going on here. And I said, well, we just got a baby that's going to be available for adoption, and man, if you want it, if you want the baby girl, she's all yours. You know, let's just do what we have to do. So he phones his wife, and I mean, in 5 minutes, we have the deal done.
Wow.
And he's thinking about the cost, and I'm saying no cost.
Wow.
Zero cost. I'll absorb the cost. So that was the very first baby. And by the way, I had to get foragers involved. I had to go search around to find out, you know, what paperwork is needed, and how do you do this? How do you work with the American Embassy? All of this stuff that we knew nothing about. So it took us weeks to put it all together for them to get this baby girl and take it back to the States. And sure enough, that's our very first, our first baby was the first illegal baby. Because we had to do all sorts of forging and crazy stuff.
Wow.
We were saving this baby, and that was it. Well, you know, I'm like you, Steve. When you get the bit in your mouth, you go with it, right? And nothing gets in your way. You go for it.
Well, I want your opinion on this. Do you foresee in the future, again, the direction that we're headed here in the United States, a child quota via a high tax?
Oh yeah, and I'm glad you're asking the question, but you know full well where Obama's heading.
Yeah.
Obama's model and everything is China.
Right.
But he's following.
Yeah, read the New York Times. The New York Times talks about China, you know, like they're the model for the United States.
Well, I gotta tell you, and I think you and I have, if not talked about it, we've gone back and forth in email or on Facebook. But you remember, I'm the guy that sat down and at the piano with Obama's brother Mark. Obama's brother Mark is in China and has been there for almost 10 years. And you know he's a partner with the military brass, the top dogs in China, in internet cafes.
Wow! No, I didn't know that. You never mentioned that to me.
Oh, sorry. Then it was somebody else.
Okay, no problem. Wow.
And you know, check this out. I mean, where's the outcry about the President of the United States having a brother who's in bed with, in business with, the top military leaders of the country of China? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
That ring a bell for somebody? So anyway, I mean, I know this, and I've talked about this before online, but nobody's paying attention. Well, I know you'll pay attention.
Yo, yeah, you just woke me up.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
So anyway,
yeah.
Back to Pink Pagoda, which, by the way, the Pink Pagoda, which is the name of the book,
right?
It really just tells the story of how this all took place. And, you know, here we are, we're 12 years into it. This last month in November, we rescued our 43,000th babies. That sounds funny. 43,000 babies we saved. So now we're into 43,000.
Oh my God, that's phenomenal. 43,000, right?
Yeah, it is phenomenal, but you know, just, I guess, saying yes to that very, very first baby, I was really, I guess, listening to God. I'm gonna say that because, you know, I'm a Christian kind of guy. And you really, you know how Christians, all, they pray this prayer, you know, show me what you want me to do, God, right?
Yeah.
Well, you never expect that it's going to be big. Like, you expect, you know, you do one little thing, you do another and another. So we saved the first baby. Well, within a week of that first baby, and now I have an organization at school, so I have thousands and thousands of employees all across China. So the girl whose sister was the one who was going to do in this first baby, and we rescued the baby, she comes to my office door like a week later and says, oh, Mr. Jim, we've got two more babies.
Wow.
And it was like, oops.
Okay. Oh, and then they got another two, and another two. I'm sure. It just multiplies.
Yeah, so 43,000 babies later, you know, I'm considered a criminal by the United Nations. People think I'm buying and selling babies.
Right. Oh, yeah, they spin it because, you know, a population control is their agenda. They don't want you saving anything. They, you know, you are a speed bump to their agenda of population control. They don't want babies saved.
Okay, and I gotta tell you this. If you want to call them customers or clients or whatever, I'm not sure, you don't want to call them patients maybe, but the largest group that we deal with in saving the babies is the actual military, the People's Liberation Army in China. Their military people are the ones who just clung on to us when they had the opportunity to save their baby girls.
Wow.
And not have to... frankly, we've been helped by the people at the highest levels of the intelligence community in China to make this thing possible. Otherwise, I mean, I would have imploded long ago if it hadn't been for a guy I call Yoda because of how he looked when he first approached me, very surreptitiously. But you know, you know how Yoda looks, eh? That funny
right.
little character with a little robe on, you know, from Star Wars.
Right, I remember.
That's how this guy looked when he first approached me. I thought he was a bum. I came into a restaurant where I was sitting and plopped himself down across from me in the booth, and the next thing you know, he's telling me about what I've done for the next 8 months, or the last 8 months. They've been following me to find out if I was a good guy, or should I be arrested and, you know, killed.
I wanted to ask you one more question. I'm just curious. What's the sentiment in China about America and 9/11? You know what?
9/11 specifically?
Well, has anyone ever said, you know, what's their, you know, the average person's opinion on America, on 9/11, on the war on terror? What they usually say to you about, you know, everything that's going on?
Well, there's been a huge change in attitude toward America since Obama came along. Back when 9/11 happened, you got to remember. Remember how they called George Bush a cowboy? Remember that?
Right.
That was one of the names that people around the world had for him. And for some, it was a pejorative. Like, it was a negative comment. Well, the Chinese called him cowboy, too. But for them, it was a mark of respect. Because a cowboy, in their minds, you know, they look at the cowboys from the movies. You know, and that's the guy who rescue the women folk from the engines, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
Blow out the gun and shoot the bad guy. So their idea of a cowboy was a good thing. It was a guy who, he would stand up to you face to face with a gun and blow your brains out because you deserved it. So it was a really good thing to have the Chinese calling George Bush a cowboy because it was a mark of respect.
Hmm.
It also meant that they couldn't predict what the cowboy would do.
Right.
So there was a little fear thrown into the mix.
Well, you know what it is, too? That's saying that he's not reading their script. He's not controlled or their puppet. You know, even though economically we were tied to them, you know, he wasn't on the communist playbook like Obama is right now, you know.
Well, exactly right, and you know, the fact that they feared what George W. Bush would do, because to their mind he was a cowboy and unpredictable, this was a very good thing, and it was a good position for America to have as a result of George Bush himself, and that view that the world had of him, of being unpredictable or being a cowboy, this was a very good thing.
Mm-hmm.
The problem now is that they call Obama Monkey Man.
Oh my God! Well, very, you know, you got to realize China. I mean, obviously they can be very racist. Obviously, you know. Well, you know, it's, they're a homogeneous society. So anyone that's not Chinese is looked upon as, you know, the enemy. Really, you know, because I've studied the Asian history and martial arts too. You know, go ahead.
Yeah, but let me tell you. Well, martial arts, most of that's out of Japan, as you know. Most of the martial arts that people are learning. But here in China.
Well, no, the Shaolin and Kung Fu. You know, Kung Fu in China.
Oh yeah, that's Chinese. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the regular Chinese people are all white wannabes. They want to be like us.
Mm-hmm.
They look at movies. They look at what we have. They look at the style that we.
Oh, my dog's getting here. I'm sorry. Go. I'm sorry, Jim. Dad.
Yeah, they look at that and they want to have that. So the young kids in China, you know, are reading all these magazines, you know, like the popular star kind of magazines, and for them it's we're about drug, sex, and rock and roll. That's the West.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
They like that. They like that edginess, and so they all want the riches that we have, the style that we have, the wealth that we portray, the status that we seem to have that they don't have. So they're looking up to us. They really look up to the West,
right?
And want everything we have. Of course, the leadership is very, very heavy in the old style communist revolutionary model, and that's more coming up with the new two guys coming up to take over China, Xi and Bo. They're the guys who are going, heading back to the old celebration of straight communist revolutionary status. They love that.
Wow.
In fact, Chongqing, the largest city in the world that has 31 million people in it, where Xi is, that's his home, Chongqing, they stopped in 2005, they stopped celebrating the international heroes. They used to have a doctor, an Indian doctor that they looked up to and celebrated, and then they had the Canadian doctor, Dr. Norman Bethune, who Mao wrote an essay about him and praised him as being a great internationalist, an example to communism and communists everywhere if they should live their lives like he does. That's what he said. But you know, Xi came along in 2005 and he stopped the schools from teaching in about grade 9. That's what they would call it. It's just the equivalent of grade 9. They stopped the teaching of these international heroes. He wanted everything to turn internally to celebrate the communist heroes of China. So that was a major move on his part in his area of responsibility, running this Chongqing area, that showed how, you know, basically revolutionary Chinese communist that this guy was. And, of course, the old guys, Hu Jintao being the new young guy moving into the old guy group, they loved him and respected him for this stance. So now he's the new big guy, the big power coming up, along with this other guy, Bo. So you'll see Xi taking over as chairman of the Communist Party and president of China, and Bo will probably become the new prime minister.
Wow.
This is in 2012. This is going to happen. But that's where they're headed. They're going back to the original revolutionary communist Marxist stand. Very scary, guy.
Yep. Well, Jim, thank you so much for being on the Conservative Monster Radio Show. The book is The Pink Pagoda. You can pre-order it on Amazon.com, and I'll put your link on the website. And again, it's an honor to have you on this show. You're really a great man for doing this and saving all those babies. It's just phenomenal work. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Steve. Keep up the good work yourself. We love what you do.
Thanks, bro. I'll talk to you on Facebook.
Okay, take care, guys.
All right, bye.